Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Christopher Jones Cruz, Anne Ball, and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Christopher Jones Cruz.
Every year, about 14 million people from around the world try to win one of 50,000 diversity immigrant visas. These visas let the winners live and work in the United States. The program is best known as the Green Card Lottery. The chance of winning is about 0.3%. Some Republican lawmakers want to cancel the lottery. Senators Tom Cotton of Arkansas and David Perdue of Georgia have written legislation that would end the 22-year-old visa program. The proposal also calls for lowering the number of immigrants and refugees permitted to enter the U.S. every year. Members of the House of Representatives have also written a bill that would end the diversity visa program. It is called the Safe for America Act. Both Republicans and Democrats also tried to end the lottery last year. However, those measures were included in other legislation that Congress did not approve. But unlike last year, Republicans now control Congress and the White House. Since becoming president, Donald Trump has worked to make changes in the country's immigration program. So Republicans have once again decided to try to stop the visa program. The Senate proposal is called the Reforming American Immigration for Strong Employment, or RAISE, Act. In a statement announcing the bill, the senators said it would help raise American workers' wages. "We are taking action to fix some of the shortcomings in our legal immigration system," Perdue said. "Returning to our historically normal levels of legal immigration will help improve the quality of American jobs and wages." But some researchers say it is difficult to prove there is a link between immigration and jobs and wages. Critics of the diversity visa program say people requesting the visa are sometimes victims of fraud, and they say some people lie on their applications. The U.S. government reported on fraud in the program 10 years ago. The State Department later improved the application process to reduce such wrongdoing. The diversity visa is one of the only ways foreigners can legally move to the U.S. if they are not refugees or do not have sponsors. Lottery winners must have a high school education or a work history to qualify to come to the United States. They also must be able to pay for travel to the United States and visa fees. In 2015, the U.S. gave 48,097 diversity visas. That is less than 10% of the 531,463 total immigrant visas given that year. The lottery was designed to encourage immigration to America from countries that send few immigrants to the U.S. People from countries that have sent more than 50,000 immigrants to the U.S. in the past 5 years are not permitted to enter the lottery. These countries include Bangladesh, Brazil, Canada, China, Colombia, Dominican Republic, and El Salvador. The others are Haiti, India, Jamaica, Mexico, Nigeria, Pakistan, the Philippines, Peru, South Korea, and Vietnam. Northern Ireland is the only part of the United Kingdom from which people can enter the lottery. The announcement about the raise bill followed President Trump's executive order targeting immigrants. Many people have protested the order, but groups that support restrictions on immigration support it. Many of these groups have been working for years to cancel the diversity visa program. Earlier attempts to cancel the program would have shifted the visas to employment-based visas. But the RAISE Act does not do that. It calls for cuts in family preference visas and refugee admissions, as well as elimination of the diversity lottery. It adds a new visa, which would permit the foreign-born parents of adult U.S. citizens to visit for renewable 5-year periods. They would not be given citizenship and would not be able to work in the United States. Teklab Ilos Haylu entered the lottery a few times before winning it. He has 3 children. He is from Eritrea. His wife is Ethiopian. They entered the lottery while he was studying at a graduate school in Britain, following a war between their home countries in the late 1990s. When he entered the United States, he worked as a security guard, but he was eventually able to continue his studies. During these studies, he researched the experiences of others who won the diversity lottery. He earned a doctorate degree. He now works at a community college in Colorado. Diversity immigrants usually are well paid in their home countries because of the education or work experience requirements. They also must have enough money to pay for green card fees, health examinations, and travel. Hailu says that means they will be good for the United States. In his words, they sacrifice what they have had in their own countries just to bring change for their children. On the other hand, the United States gains from people who have been educated without spending any money on these people. So, he asks, why end the program? I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
United States officials have enforced a law called the Clean Air Act for more than half a century. The measure gives the federal government power to control air pollution across the country. Since 1963, the Clean Air Act
has helped clean the air Americans breathe, control acid rain, and slow reductions in Earth's ozone layer. The ozone layer helps protect people and other living things from the sun's harmful radiation. In recent years, Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama used the act to control carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. Studies have linked those gases to rising temperatures and changes in Earth's atmosphere. Obama, in particular, sought to limit the amount of carbon dioxide American power stations could produce. But President Donald Trump is not likely to continue on that path. Trump has questioned the reality of climate change, and he suggests that federal environmental rules are hurting American businesses. Trump is reportedly preparing to use executive orders to overturn some of Obama's policies on air and water quality. He already issued one this week, an order to cancel the Clean Water Rule. The rule lets the federal government define what waters are protected under environmental regulations, such as small streams and wetlands that connect to a larger ecosystem. Federal officials say the rule is meant to help landowners understand when to ask for government approval. But critics say the Clean Water Rule gives the government too much power. As Trump signed the executive order to repeal the rule, he said environmental regulators were putting people out of jobs by the hundreds of thousands. "It's a horrible, horrible rule," he said. "Has sort of a nice name, but everything else is bad." Trump has also appointed someone who is not sure that people cause climate change to lead the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA is the federal agency that makes sure the regulations created by the Clean Air Act are followed. Before he became the EPA director, Scott Pruitt took the agency to court more than a dozen times. As the top lawyer for the state of Oklahoma, he argued the federal government did not have the power to control greenhouse gas emissions as much as it did. Pruitt spoke to EPA workers last month. He said the EPA and the nation can support energy, jobs, and the environment. "We do not need to choose," he said. More recently, Pruitt told conservative political activists that the EPA does some important work on air and water quality. But he said the Obama administration was so concerned about climate change that it neglected those activities. Supporters of rules aimed at slowing climate change say questions about the EPA's authority will likely end up in the courts. Tomas Carbonell is with the Environmental Defense Fund, a not-for-profit group. He says the Clean Air Act is one of the strongest examples of environmental legislation in the world. Carbonell says the act has also made the U.S. a global leader in pollution control technologies that are really helping to generate investments and jobs here at home. He is sure that EPA programs have strong legal and scientific support. He notes the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled 3 times that the Clean Air Act gives the EPA the right to deal with the threat of climate change. But in 2016, the Supreme Court stopped a piece of climate change legislation. That measure would have forced U.S. power centers to cut their pollution by 1/3. The court said the law has to wait until a lower court decides whether the EPA has the right to make those new regulations. Now, under the new Trump administration, it is unclear what will happen. In a speech to conservative activists last week, Trump said he would protect the environment. He has yet to say what steps he plans to take. I'm Ann Ball.
Privacy groups have raised concerns about a possible U.S. policy to ask visitors to provide social media account information and passwords at the border. Such border checks do not follow existing legal rules and violate the privacy rights of travelers, the groups say. The head of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, John Kelly, recently spoke on the issue during a hearing in the U.S. House. He said U.S. officials were considering a new policy to examine social media data of U.S. visitors from certain countries.
If they come in, we want to say, for instance, what websites do you visit, and give us your passwords. We want to get on their social media with passwords. What do you do? What do you say? If they don't want to cooperate, then they don't come in.
Kelly said the proposed policy is one of many being considered to prevent potentially dangerous people from entering the U.S. He said some people could also be asked to provide social media details during the application process before visiting America. Emma Lanzo is director of the Free Expression Project at the not-for-profit Center for Democracy and Technology. She says she was shocked to hear the government proposal was being considered.
The idea of conditioning travel to the U.S. on actually providing not just information about your social media use, but actually your passwords and the ability for customs agents to review years' worth of private emails or other communications that have nothing to do with your admissibility into the country was just a really concerning precedent.
President Donald Trump has called for stronger vetting procedures to keep out dangerous individuals and terrorists. A U.S. policy to allow border agents to search electronic devices was actually started by the previous administration of Barack Obama. It was put in place by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency, which is overseen by the Department of Homeland Security. According to the CBP, the number of electronic media searches greatly increased in 2016, Obama's last year in office. They went from 4,764 in 2015 to 23,877 a year later, the agency said. A senior Customs and Border Protection official told the Associated Press there has been no change in that policy under the Trump administration. The official added that despite the increase, the number of searches amounts to less than 0.01% of all international arrivals to the U.S. But some groups are still concerned with the rise in device searches at U.S. borders. Aisha Bhandari is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU. She says the ACLU is currently seeking answers on why this is still going on for foreign visitors, as well as some American citizens, too.
The big concern here is more and more numbers of Americans and foreign visitors to the U.S. travel with smart devices that contain almost their entire lives on those devices, financial information, health information, sensitive personal communications.
Some foreign visitors who frequently come to the U.S. are asked to provide social media information with their applications. These individuals who regularly visit the U.S. for business or tourism purposes are allowed to stay for up to 90 days without a visa. The users of this system, called the Visa Waiver Program, are asked to list social media services they use and provide usernames, but not passwords. U.S. officials recently announced plans to also add long-term Chinese visa holders to the list of applicants asked to voluntarily provide social media account information. Emma Lanzo said even though providing this information is not mandatory, either at the border or on an application beforehand, it still puts great pressure on people to comply.
You're being asked these questions and you think, you know, I'd better fill out this form as completely as possible because I don't want to give customs officials any excuse or reason to reject my application.
The ACLU's Aisha Bhandari says she fears changes in U.S. policies would cause other nations to also put in place new requirements regarding personal data collection.
If sharing social media information becomes a norm for international travel, obviously that's going to affect what people feel free to say online. The internet has really developed as a forum where people are free to speak. It's an amazing forum and a very democratizing forum, and this trend risks turning it into a largely monitored space.
Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon, has questioned the legality of government searches of devices and social media. He recently wrote a letter to Kelly expressing opposition to any future policies for visitors to provide social media passwords. Wyden is also proposing legislation that would require border agents to get a warrant to search personal devices at the border. It would also bar law enforcement from seeking social media account information and passwords. I'm Brian Lynn.
English learners know that prepositions can be difficult to master. There are 94 one-word prepositions in English and about 56 prepositions with two or more words, called complex prepositions. This adds up to 150 chances to make mistakes. We cannot, of course, explain the small differences among all 150 prepositions here. We can, however, provide you with a few explanations of different prepositions that use one particular verb, provide. When provide is followed by an indirect object, English speakers use the preposition with. Providing someone with something means to give something wanted or needed. Here is an example sentence written by U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama. Room to Read provides girls with scholarships that cover the cost of housing, food, and books. In this sentence, girls is the indirect object and scholarships is the direct object. Another preposition with the same verb is provide for. Provide for, in general, means to make whatever is necessary for someone available to him or her. We often use this expression when we talk about parents providing for their family. In a VOA Learning English story about a Cambodian-American filmmaker, we used the preposition in this way. She says, changes such as migration away from rural areas are allowing more women to find work and provide for their families. This preposition can also be used in other ways. Provide for can mean to make it possible for something to happen in the future. For example, in our story about water shortage in California, we wrote, they say California needs to find a way to provide for the growing need for water. When provide is followed by a direct object, English speakers can use the prepositions to or for. Provide something to or for someone means that you deliver or give something to someone. For example, the company provides health insurance to all of its employees. Health insurance is the direct object, and employees is the indirect object. In this example, we also could have said, the company provides health insurance for all of its employees. Both these sentences are correct, but it is more common to use provide something for than provide something to someone. The expression using to is rather new to American English, according to the internet application Google Ngrams. Google Ngrams is an app that shows general changes in English usage by searching all the words in Google's digital books. The graph on Ngram for provide something to shows it was hardly ever used before 1960. Compare that to the Ngram graph for provide something for. The expressions appear much more often. The expressions also appeared much earlier, around 1920. They were used then almost as often as they are used now. Understanding English prepositions can be difficult, even for native speakers. But we hope we have been able to provide assistance to all our listeners and readers. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.